Well, we're just analyzing sort of what the options are and evaluating the pros and cons of each as far as from a structural standpoint.
The governor announces a delay in offering details on changes to the Alaska LNG project. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, March 18th. Good evening. I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Google lobbyists and state representatives search for Alaska's role in the driverless car market.
That's going to be a multi-billion dollar industry. If Alaska can just get a sliver of that economic pie, that will be good.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
the Red Dog Mine, committed to environmental excellence. Alaska Community Action on Toxics believes future generations have the right to clean water, clean air, and toxic-free food. Learn more by visiting akaction.org. This message sponsored by Alaska Community Action on Toxics.
When Governor Bill Walker held a press conference in February to announce changes coming to the Alaska LNG gas line project, he left most observers scratching their heads over what's next for the proposed pipeline. Standing beside representatives from the state's three partners, ExxonMobil, BP, and ConocoPhillips, Walker said they would release more details in March. Now that deadline is being pushed back. APRN's Rachel Waldholtz reports.
Governor Walker says negotiations between the state and its three oil company partners are continuing, and he doesn't expect to have any update for the public before April.
Things seem to take a bit longer than one anticipates, so when we had a press conference with representatives of Exxon, BP, and ConocoPhillips, we thought there'd be something out this month, and it just looked like that's going to happen this month.
In February, the governor and oil company said they were exploring options to keep the project going despite low oil and gas prices. As for what exactly that means, it's still not clear.
Well, we're just analyzing sort of what the options are and evaluating the pros and cons of each as far as from a structural standpoint. So that has not concluded yet. So when it does, we'll have something to report.
The original goal was to hammer out agreements between the state and its partners for lawmakers to vote on this spring, and to put a constitutional amendment on the ballot this fall to lock in tax rates for the pipeline. But slow negotiations, crashing oil prices, and a weak natural gas market have combined to throw that timeline into question. Walker now says it's clear there will be no constitutional amendment this year. But he says he thinks there's a way forward without it. And he's adamant that the project must still come online as planned in the mid-2020s.
You look at the 2024-2025 range, where this would be first gas out of Alaska for this project. It's a good target time in the market for this to come online. So that part has not changed.
The big question is whether that's still realistic, especially for a so-called giga project expected to cost $45 to $65 billion. Larry Persley is an advisor to the Kenai Peninsula Borough. He just returned from a conference of liquefied natural gas producers and buyers in Singapore.
I guess the main takeaway is the market has gotten worse in the past year, not better.
With new projects coming online around the world, there's too much supply chasing too little demand, and that's driving down gas prices. Analysts do expect the market will need new suppliers by the middle of the next decade, but there are a lot of projects hoping to meet that need. Alaska can only compete if it can keep its costs very low. And that may be what the state and its partners are trying to figure out. For now, behind closed doors. From the Energy Desk, I'm Rachel Waldholtz in Anchorage.
A contingent of senior Arctic Council officials wrapped up a three-day meeting at the University of Alaska Fairbanks on Thursday. And this morning, the U.S. chairman of the group reported on their deliberations. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
U.S. Ambassador David Bolton says on the final day of the senior Arctic officials meeting, he challenged participants to break out of what tends to be a short-term mindset that comes with the two-year chairmanship of the Arctic Council. The organization that represents the interests of the eight circumpolar nations and other groups, such as the region's indigenous peoples.
We embarked in a fairly extraordinary discussion of what the Arctic Council might be doing differently with respect to dealing with climate change in the wake of the Paris Agreement.
That's the agreement that came out of the United Nations conference in December that calls for international action to limit global warming to 2 degrees Celsius, or about 3.5 degrees Fahrenheit. But average temperatures in the Arctic have already risen about that much, and Bolton says the senior Arctic officials realize that lends an urgency to the Arctic Council's response.
We need to understand this better. How can we help local communities adapt to climate change in the north? What does it mean for the rest of the planet? That was a fairly intense discussion involving the scientists and policymakers looking ahead 5, 10, 20 years.
Adapting to climate change was high up on the agenda for the senior Arctic officials' meeting, along with other issues, especially resource extraction and concerns for the health of the people who live in the region.
Some of the initiatives that we launched almost a year ago are still in train, of course, but one of them is to create an academy for studying and actually putting into place renewable energy technologies in remote communities in places like Alaska.
Bolton also cited U.S. efforts to build support for funding adaptation by promoting awareness of climate change impact on the Arctic. He says President Obama's visit to Alaska last summer was the biggest example of that initiative.
The attention and the media that followed really helped to make real for a lot of Americans the situation in Alaska, the profound and enduring interests of our nation in the Arctic region as a whole.
But Bolton conceded Arctic Council member nations have not yet come up with a way to pay the multi-billion dollar price tag for sustaining an ongoing climate change adaptation program. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
The state of Alaska lost its court case for easements along historic trails across native allotments near Chicken in interior Alaska. The Department of Law is now turning to the larger issue of getting easements along historic trails crossing private and federal land. KNBA's Jacqueline Estes reports.
This week, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled in favor of the U.S. Department of Interior, Tanana Chiefs Conference, and Native Allotment owners Agnes and Ann Purdy. Richard Monkman represents the regional nonprofit Tanana Chiefs Conference on the side of the Purdys.
In simple terms, this was a land grab. The state was trying to get something for nothing at the expense of a Native family that had been in possession of this land for a long, long time. And the courts put an end to that.
Monkman says the facts fly in the face of the state's argument that the trails are needed for public use.
They asserted in court that they had a right of way to go from Chicken to Eagle across the Purdy's land, and they needed the land for that purpose. But there's a state highway just a few miles to the east that takes people back and forth quite adequately. There's no reason for them to take this land.
Department of Law Assistant Attorney General Corey Mills says the state has not decided whether to appeal that case to the U.S. Supreme Court.
We're still evaluating all of our options on this case.
Mills says the state has a larger issue to contend with.
The underlying case has to do with the state seeking to quiet title to public trails in the 40-mile region. And these trails go across both private and public land, as well as the land of two in particular Alaska Native allotments.
Mills says the private landowners in the area are okay with giving the state title to rights of way across their lands. She says the state is already in court over getting title for historic trails across federal lands.
The important parts of the case and the crux of the case are really about these public trails as they go along federal land. So the important issues are still really at the district court level. So we're going to start, that case was stayed until this appeal occurred. So that's going to keep going forward.
This state has up to 60 days to decide whether to appeal the Ninth Circuit Court's ruling. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jacqueline Estes.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, mushers adorn themselves and their dog sleds with political sponsors.
So it's not just like, hi, I want to run the Iditarod for me. It brings a larger purpose to my mushing.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal Housing Lender, Member FDIC. Join the Salmon Project this month as they highlight the salmon lives of Alaskans and communities across the state. Find them on Facebook or visit salmonlife.org to make sure you don't miss these powerful stories. This message sponsored by the Salmon Project.
It may be a while before ice road truckers become ice road computers, but one of Google's top lobbyists was in Juneau yesterday to talk about driverless cars. Google State Legislative Affairs Representative Ron Barnes wouldn't commit to bringing autonomous vehicles to Alaska anytime soon, saying Google's engineers determine where the company tests its cars.
We keep a list of places everywhere that might be somewhere we would need, but the engineering needs drive really where we go right now, and what new information do we need in order to make the software, to make the cars more robust in their ability to handle driving scenarios.
Barnes' visit gave Fairbanks Economic Development Corporation project manager Jomo Stewart a chance to pitch the state as the ideal place for Google to test cars in cold weather conditions.
Cold can be a real challenge, but can also be an opportunity. And so we market Fairbanks, Alaska, promote Fairbanks, Alaska as the most accessible, reliable, and affordable place in the U.S. to do cold weather testing.
Palmer Republican Representative Shelley Hughes says the state can be ahead of the curve in planning for driverless cars.
I believe that if we can open the door to these kind of things every bit and piece, that's going to be a multi-billion dollar industry. If Alaska can just get a sliver of that economic pie, that will be good.
Google's driverless cars have driven more than 1 million miles on roads in California, as well as pilot projects in Austin, Texas, and Kirkland, Washington. Renaming of North America's highest peak from Mount McKinley to Denali was recognized yesterday by federal and tribal officials at the Tanana Chiefs Conference annual meeting in Fairbanks. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, three other lesser publicized name changes were also highlighted.
U.S. Interior Secretary Sally Jewell took action last summer to formally rename Mount McKinley to its traditional Athabascan name, Denali. The executive action announced by President Obama during an Alaska visit followed decades of congressional wrangling over the issue. Secretary Jewell's senior advisor for Alaska Affairs, Michael Johnson, pointed to the significance of the name change in an address to Tanana Chiefs Conference delegates.
This is a symbol, but it's an important one. Because it's about respect, and that's, I think, first and foremost why the secretary was happy to do it.
Denali isn't the only federally approved change to a traditional Alaska Native name. TCC President Victor Joseph noted three other recent interior region name changes made by Secretary Jewell.
The Black River, the traditional name was Dronjik, and that came through. And then when we're looking at the Chandelier, there was two names that came in, and that's Tidrunjik and Chidrunjik, the east and west of the Chandelier River. And, you know, that means so much to us to have the original names come back to the areas that we have lived in forever.
Joseph says Secretary Jewell made the river name changes at the request of Yukon Flats region residents. Celebration of the name changes was part of a potlatch that concluded the TCC annual convention. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
For years, scientists have known permafrost can act as a reliable gauge to chart climate change in the north. As KUAC's Robert Hannon reports, a new study in the journal Nature Geoscience reveals the wide extent and speed in which ice wedges are degrading and altering the landscape.
For years, Anna Lilledahl and her colleagues have been charting changes in ice wedges that can form characteristic polygon shapes in the Arctic landscape. Lilledahl is assistant professor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks' Water and Environmental Research Center. While previous studies have documented permafrost thawing, their research encompassed the entire circumpolar region, and the research shows a consistent thawing taking place.
The process is happening not just in Alaska, but also in Canadian and Russian Arctic, and that it is happening in a relatively short time period, less than a decade, even after just one really warm summer.
Lilledahl says as the structure of polygon ice wedges degrade, new channels channels for water are formed, ultimately draining and drying the landscape. The implications are varied, she says. In the summer of 2007, the Alaska Arctic saw scant rainfall. That summer also saw large tundra fires. Lilydahl says such dynamics can create their own feedback loops.
We could have potentially a normal rainfall in the summer, but still creating really dry surface, and that could have easier time for the fires to get started. That in turn can then degrade the ice edges even more.
Lilydahl says as the Arctic landscape drains, more sediments and nutrients can flow downstream, changing other ecosystems, offering other opportunities for further research. In Fairbanks, I'm Robert Hannon.
9 Alaska high school students competed this week in the state finals of the Poetry Out Loud in Juneau. It's a classroom-based poetry program, and this year, more than 3,600 students participated. West Anchorage senior Shannon Croft won the state competition. KTOO's Kira Alkema has the story.
West Anchorage High School senior Shannon Croft takes a deep breath, then begins,
"When I have fears that I may cease to be," by John Keats. When I have fears that I may cease to be, before my pen has gleaned my teeming brain, before high pilot...
Her recitation of John Keats' poem won her the Poetry Out Loud State Championship. As state champion, Croft received a $200 cash prize, a $500 stipend to buy poetry books for her school, and an all-expenses-paid trip to Washington, D.C. for the national competition in May. Last year, West Anchorage High School student Mava Ordaz, now a freshman at Columbia University, won the national competition. Thunder Mountain High School freshman Brianna Letter didn't advance to state finals this year, but she still got something out of the experience. Poetry Out Loud is a chance to practice something many students dread, public speaking.
You should have seen me right before I went up for the school competition. My heart was pounding. I was breathing really heavily. I realized that after the school competition and during the district competition, I felt a lot better standing in front of all those people. So I definitely think after this, I think I'll be a lot more comfortable with my voice through microphone or, you know, just talking to a group of people in general.
Letter's mentor, Thunder Mountain English teacher Barbara Meyer, says Poetry Out Loud is about encouraging students to develop memorization, analysis, and public speaking skills.
I think kids grow just by standing up and presenting something to their peers. Poetry Out Loud is a defined list of poems that have been chosen because they can be presented well. So there's that safety that no matter what they choose, there's something in that poem that a kid has to discover. So they're digging into really good literature and then playing with it, standing up and presenting.
And for Letter, it started out as a finals week assignment. By February, Letter had advanced through school and district Poetry Out Loud competitions, beating out more than 50 students for the chance to represent Juneau at the state competition. With finalists traveling from as far away as Shektulik and Unalaska, the state finals were also a chance to visit the capital city. Before the competition, finalists heard guest lectures from local artists, visited state representatives at the Capitol, and toured the governor's mansion. Alaska state champion Shannon Croft heads to Washington, D.C. for the Poetry Out Loud National Finals, May 2nd through 4th. Croft will represent Alaska and defend Ordaz's title. In Juneau, I'm Kira Alkema.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska Pacific University delivers a distinctive educational adventure designed to support your personal and professional goals. Through generous APU scholarship packages and the new APU Promise Tuition Grant Program, APU is a sound educational investment in your future. Apply today at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University. The Medallion Foundation and Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugia,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Aleutianerehamut.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, Iditarod politics. It's not rare to see mushers touting various brands and companies as they drive their dog teams down the Iditarod Trail. Sponsorship is a major source of financial support. But as KNOM's Emily Schwing reports, this year a few mushers have gotten involved in touting political candidates as both the congressional and presidential election season heats up.
I'm Jeff King. It takes a lot of training and planning to win the Iditarod. More than anything,
last month, U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski released a radio spot in anticipation of this year's Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race.
Can change in an instant. And that's when having a strong leader on your team can make all the difference. Isn't that right, Dee Dee?
You said it, John. Every team.
Mushers Jeff King, John Baker, and Dee Dee Jonro offered their endorsements for her re-election.
That's why Jeff, John, and I are proud to be on Team Lisa.
The spot came out 10 days before the race began. It was a savvy way to take advantage of the Iditarod's Alaskan audience. John Baker says his family's been tight with the Murkowskis for many years.
Lisa's mother and my mother went to high school together. Since then, our families have been extremely close.
Baker also endorsed Murkowski's father, Frank, when he ran for U.S. Senate in 1981. Musher Dee Dee Jonro also says she didn't think twice about endorsing Senator Murkowski.
She's a long time family friend.
This is only the second time Jonro has endorsed a political candidate. In the 1980s, she supported John Binkley's runs for both state House and state Senate. Jonro has lined a dog team out for the start of the Iditarod more times than any other musher. She says it's the race's historic background that justifies her involvement in state politics.
Mushing was what brought attention to the fact that we had people dying in Nome, that we had the need, and it was a political decision to take mushers instead of airplanes at that one particular time. So I think that it's very much a marriage between politics and mushing.
While senators from other states are fighting for their political lives, Murkowski is running against a lesser-known independent challenger this year. She's used the Iditarod as a platform for campaigning before, but given that her re-election isn't nearly as contentious as it has been in the past, endorsements from mushers might be more of a personal gesture than any sort of coordinated strategy. Four-time champion Jeff King says Senator Murkowski has helped him sort through a few problems that he's had running his tourism business near Denali National Park, so he was happy to return the favor.
She returned my phone calls, or at least her staff did, I believe she cares.
But King says he's not closing the door on considering other candidates, given a number of federal-level issues currently playing out in Congress.
I'm not saying I'm going to vote for her next time. It's a long ways away, and there's some really important stuff going on.
He says he agreed to the endorsement because at this point in the election season, he trusts the senator more than any other candidate.
I believe she believes in Alaska, and I believe she's doing the best she can. And I don't think there are ulterior motives.
This year, the Iditarod Trail Committee implemented a new rule that prohibits mushers from making statements that disparage the race or its sponsors for a month and a half after they cross the finish line. Iditarod Trail Committee CEO Stan Hooley says political endorsements don't fall under that rule.
You know, there are people that are in political office that have done a great deal for this event in advocating certain issues where we needed help, and it's a natural thing for us to want to return that.
Alaska's lone representative Don Young also put out a short video in which the congressman spoke about his Iditarod memories, but no mushers have formally endorsed Young. Stan Hooley says he doesn't expect the race organization itself to formally endorse any candidates.
Probably not formally, no, but I certainly don't see issues with individual competitors doing that.
Endorsements this year go beyond races specific to Alaska. Musher Monica Zappa hung an enormous sign for presidential candidate Bernie Sanders on her dog truck at the start line of the race. She also adorned her sled and parka with Sanders campaign buttons and stickers.
So it's not just like, hi, I want to run the Iditarod for me. So it brings a larger purpose to my mushing and, you know, maybe even the event.
Zappa has always been outspoken. She uses her time on the trail to raise awareness for other causes like the protection of Bristol Bay's wild salmon. She and Dee Dee Jonro realize opining from the back of a dog sled isn't for everyone.
John Rowe adds that she wouldn't personally choose to jump full force into the political realm.
Well, I don't think that's really our arena. I don't see myself as some kind of a political, you know, animal. I really don't.
John Rowe says at one time she had considered running for office in Juneau, but she decided it's not the kind of race she wants to compete in. For AK, I'm Emily Schwing in Nome.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week, we're hearing from Patricia Ratcliffe from Anchorage. Ratcliffe moved up here 30 years ago from the Dakotas to get married.
Well, the winters are longer. You only have three seasons. Well, actually two, winter and spring. Where I grew up, it was all the four seasons. You know, it was winter, it was cold, colder than it was here, because we don't have any trees. There's a lot of wind back home. But you had really nice summers in the 90s. You know, you had fall. Right now, I probably couldn't handle the summer as hot as it is down there now. But I've been in Alaska for a long time, so I would really like to move if that was a possibility. For me, the reason that I would like to go is, like I said, to travel, see more things. Because in Alaska here, you're kind of stuck. I have kids, but two of them live in right outside Seattle. We didn't have a lot of different cultures or a lot of different races where I came from. So I came up here, and it's a big diversity. And the people are nice and everything, and the same in the lower 48. You can always see wildlife up here. Like yesterday, I saw a moose and its baby, and I was walking. Of course, I turned around and walked the other way, you know. Yeah, they think you live out in the wilderness, you know, that there isn't really anything. It's the kind of perceptive they have. Like, you're way out in the middle of nowhere and you're stuck. If I would have stayed, I probably would have never got married and had my kids. So that's one good thing.
Patricia Ratcliffe lives in Anchorage. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Emily Schwing, Wesley Early, and Annie Feit. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
That's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Rachel Waldholtz and Jacqueline Estes in Anchorage, Tim Ellis, Dan Bross, and Robert Hannon in Fairbanks, and Andrew Kitchenman and Kira Elkema in Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Alaska's tobacco quitline reminds you that 88% of Alaskans don't allow smoking in their home. A smoke-free environment helps prepare kids for a healthier life and a future free from tobacco. And it makes good economic sense. Secondhand smoke damages property, decreasing its value. Exposure to its toxins lead to disease and increased medical costs. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or enroll online at alaskaquitline.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline. It's as easy as 1, 2, 3. 1, file your 2016 PFD application today. 2, receive a confirmation of filing. And 3, sign electronically with your secure My Alaska account. Visit pfd.alaska.gov for more information. And remember, the deadline to apply is Thursday, March 31st. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.